Good morning. Welcome to Turnout Radio on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Nicole Inika Hamilton, back to open up with you about the latest on the dance scene and the heart of what moves us. Thank you for tuning in to share time and rhythm with us. Welcome to this dance space. Well, this morning, as always, we invite you to come in as we explore the stories that live both on and beyond the stage. And today, we have a wonderful guest joining us on the program. My guest this morning has been known to say that in all that she does as a mother, daughter, and artist, that she believes in the continuum. Coming up on the show, Kate Hilliard, Artistic Director of Arts Aurelia in Ontario, Canada, and faculty at Toronto Metropolitan University, is here and will be with me for the full hour. So stay tuned and stay locked in right here to CIUT 89.5 FM. We're going to take a break and be right back with Kate Hilliard. Welcome back to Turnout Radio. I'm Nicole Inika Hamilton. My guest today, Kate Hilliard, creates through movement, digital media, writing, and conversation. Her performances closely examine themes of transformation and invites collaboration. Kate is the Artistic Director of Arts Aurelia in Ontario, Canada, where she programs residencies and festivals to invite learning and community gatherings. Now, she is faculty at Toronto Metropolitan University, teaching dance and acting students in the areas of creation and producing. Kate's work has been presented in North America and abroad, and she studied art history at the University of Toronto and holds an MFA in creative practice from the TransArt Institute through Plymouth University in the UK. Kate lives with her family on the Black River in Washego. Please join me in welcoming to the show the ever so fabulous Kate Hilliard. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Nicole. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, what a pleasure to have you on the show. How are you doing this morning?
I'm excited. It's Halloween. What mother and artist doesn't love Halloween? I'm great. I'm feeling very moved and grateful for the people that I work with, and it's been a very busy season, and I'm delighted to be here with you this morning.
Delighted to be with you as well. The last time I saw you was at the 2025 Fall for Dance North Festival, where we had the opportunity to dialogue with David Rokeby regarding technology, media, and dance, and how these relationships enhance, transform, and support the stories that we tell on stage. What a wonderful conversation that was.
It was. It was amazing. I'm so grateful to you and for Fall for Dance North, because David is a person that I've followed for a long time. His work at the BMO Lab has inspired my own work here at Arts Aurelia with the Dance and Design Residency. And generally speaking, his practice as an artist is quite mind-blowing, as one who loves to collaborate with artists that are working in various technologies. I really look to him as an expert and a person that can offer a lot of wisdom. So I'm so grateful for that conversation. It was really rich.
Indeed. Thank you, Kate. I was grateful for the very insightful shares that came from the conversation that day. And you mentioned David's inspiration and the work that you do, and I'd like to touch on that. Your work creates through movement, digital media, writing, and conversation, and your performances closely examine themes of transformation. Talk to us more about what inspires your creations and the themes that you examine.
Absolutely. Certainly. Well, I am an artist that starts with the body. I have a training in dance, and movement is my language of expression. I came to a way of making choreography out of a series of fortunate and some unfortunate events. For a very long time, I was making works that always had text, always had sort of fractured understandings of linear narrative that I would then break up so that they were not so linear. But performances that worked in movement and spoken word, always a lot of collaboration. I've been working with one of my closest collaborators is Jeremy Mima, and I've been working with Jeremy for the better part of 10 years in areas of sound and projection design. And so I was on a path to telling stories that were closely connected to my own narratives in the world, but that I hoped would have a sort of large reach into bigger themes that I think we all experience as humans. But something happened in my life. My dad had a stroke, and he was a very important figure in my life, a good friend, an amazing conversationalist. And for 10 years, after his stroke, he worked to regain his ability to talk. He had aphasia. And during those years of my life, I was aware of how much the body was responsible for offering information. I used to watch my dad and my mom communicating without my dad being able to really speak. And sometimes in 5 minutes, they would say more with their bodies than they would, verbally with one another. So over that period of time, I developed a strong sense that movement was in fact a language, and that I wanted to deal with it as a language in my own creative process to an almost, obsessive level. I wanted to start to code with the body. I wanted to make movement structures that were directly linked to the things that fell out of people's mouths. Because I was interested in bodies conversing physically, but also because I was incredibly moved by the whole understanding of miscommunication. And so at the same time, I started writing. And dove into a creative writing practice that consumed me on a regular basis. I would write in tangents. I would just sit down and things would pour out of me. So in about 2019, right before the pandemic, I was invited to the Springboard Montreal Professional Project by Alexandra Wells, who's a dear friend and colleague, and sort of my grandmother in the dance world, one of my colleagues that I really look to for support and guidance. And she invited me to come as a researching artist, and I developed a way of working where I would take my writing and the dancers would make a gesture for every single word. And we would follow rules to a pretty, like there was a pretty high bar, you know, we would include punctuation, and where there was a repetition of word, it meant there was a repetition of gesture, and it was sort of a manner of creating physical vocabulary. And that's what started perhaps this new path in my creative process that led to Story Creatures, that was just presented at the AGO through the Fall for Dance North Festival. The intersection of telling story through the body from a story that I actually wrote. Story Creatures is a little post-apocalyptic fable that I wrote in the middle of the pandemic about the rebirth after the worst has happened to our planet. And we took that piece of writing, the dancers and I, and we went into the studio and we coded it to the body. So that is a very, very important part of the work. And then equally as important is the sound and projection work that accompanies the installation, which I've created in partnership with Jeremy Minma. And that those elements of my work are also dear to me, in the way we can use projection and media, the fracturing of sound, to offer different ways in to storytelling, the sort of multi entry point into an experience for the audience.
When you reflect upon the intersections that you've mentioned, and also the narratives that were a part of your initial interests, can you share what you may have discovered about your own approach to practice?
Mm-hmm. I can. I am very interested in magnifying that which is incredibly intimate. I'm interested in the in-between moments between large events and the aftermath of perhaps trauma, or the aftermath of monumental change. I'm not interested in putting monumental change on stage. I'm interested in what happens in the human experience after the fact. And I'm also interested in expressing it through ways that aren't necessarily direct, because I think these things are very personal, and I think we all come to them differently. So I'm working as an artist to create an environment where we can be contemplative, where we can sit in space together, observe, reflect, and take things with us, or perhaps empty out and leave them right there in the performance setting and leave them behind when we leave. It's a very specific and subtle corridor that I'm interested in as a maker. And I guess I didn't know that about myself until I made Story Creatures. I think I discovered that. I discovered how specific that space is, and also how difficult it is to make. Story Creatures was not without its hurdles. So I did learn that about myself on this journey to making story creatures.
You mentioned the in-between moments. And what comes to mind is I'm considering the possibilities of what can happen in those spaces, the learning, the awakenings. What is it that intrigues you about those in-between spaces? Is it that they're sometimes not spoken about, or is it something else?
Sure. Absolutely. The sometimes secrecy or privacy of those moments. Absolutely. But I also think that's where the transformation happens. I think that's where the change, the moving forward, the aha, the penny drops, the on to the next. You know, we've already collected ourselves in those big moments, or if the moment is happening to us involuntarily, it's happening to us, it's being imposed upon us, and we're just in a moment of dealing. But it's the reflection, and it's the space that I think we have both in creative process to as makers to be in those transformative moments ourselves and make things, but also offering a space for that in performance. I've found that over the years, I'm more and more interested in creating environments where people have a chance to really settle in and feel and understand the way the light changes in the room, the way the person across from them might have just tugged on their shirt a certain way, that just gives a lot of room and time to experience. I'm in awe of people who make performances that have quick paced events that can never let you take your eyes away. You know, that is a kind of performance structure that I certainly have an enormous amount of respect for, but it's not what I'm doing. It's not what I'm doing. I'm making something these days that takes a lot of time. It's durational.
Stay with us. More of Turnout Radio coming up after this. Kate, one of the questions that we explored at the Ball for Dance North Festival was this curiosity about technology acting as an extension of the body or potentially as a collaborator with its own agency or acting as both. And so can you share your thoughts regarding that?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, just to say, I think that we are in a very interesting moment right now where this question is even possible. I think the whole understanding that technologies can have their own agencies is something that's on the minds of most people who are working in those technologies or who are perhaps afraid to work in those technologies. You know, AI is something that's on everyone's mind. I have been making performances that include light and sound proposals, sound designs that rest maybe outside of the usual or more formal proposals that are made in a theater. And I'm also working with projection and collaborating with designers. I mentioned Jeremy Mimma for many years now. And I would say that we're never, I never want to forget that those technologies are using tools that are being managed and envisioned by a human body. I don't like to lose sight of that. But I would say that I make work with the body, and then I'm collaborating with artists who are using technology as a tool to make a design. And what I would say is that the magic happens in the sort of collision and the liminal space between those two proposals, that we find really interesting content in that moment of chance, or sometimes that moment of chaos, where no one really knows what's going to happen. The intervention of my body into that technology, or the body of a dancer that I'm collaborating with, is this unknown place. So I would say a lot of the time it's both. That said, I think it's important that we recognize when to give up our agency and when not to. I think that's a really important question that I'm asking myself all the time. Let's see if I can offer an example of this. The incredible projection work that Jeremy Mimma designed using film content that we both collaborated on for the years leading up to this project is on its own really incredible material, but the intervention of a human body means the play of shadow, and the play of shadow all of a sudden proposes a choreography between live body, projected body, and the shadow of a live body, and also the shadow of live bodies coming into the technology, because those are the shadows of the audience members. So that kind of chaos, I think, is really rich. I also think that we can use technology as an extension of the body to create amazing things, and that sometimes it is to our benefit. I was during our talk at Fall for Dance North, I mentioned that my students are sometimes struggling with their creative statements, and often in a moment of frustration, they'll give up their agency to ChatGPT. And I have, over the last little while, try to encourage them to, instead of doing that, pick up their phone and play voice text, and to just talk about your creative ideas, just talk about what is meaningful to you in the world and why you come to the art with the ideas that you do. And then take that text and throw it into a document and edit it, and voila, you have an artistic statement that came from your body. It's an oral practice for writing. And I would argue that those moments are important to remember rather than just giving up our creative agency to someone or something that is not a part of our body. But I do love the space where it feels like I'm collaborating with something that's not sentient. I had a collaboration with Google Translate not too long ago. I was concerned and had a statement about translation and the lack of languages that are available to us on Google Translate. So I typed in the words "I am here" and then erased them. And I did this in all of the languages that are available to me on Google Translate. And it was very interesting to see how the program behaved throughout this process, and surprising to see the way letters came up on the screen, disappeared and then reappeared. And of course, depending on your language lens, depending on what your language lens is, every person will read this differently. So that space of feeling like you're collaborating with machine is very exciting. I think it's not one way or the other. I think it's many things, and knowing ourselves. David made this comment the other night when we were having our discussion at FFTN, knowing ourselves and understanding the entry point as an artist is so very important, because that provides a secure platform to then be able to take great risks.
And speaking of that word risks, do you think that it's in the absence of the knowing of ourselves and perhaps even the giving up of agency at times that could create a greater burden of risk?
Certainly, yes. Giving up our agency, yeah, I would argue it's dangerous. Mm-hmm. I think part of the difficulty of growing creatively is that sometimes it's hard to tell whether or not we're giving up our agency or we're just moving into the unknown. That's challenging. And it's challenging in collaboration, because we're at any given moment working with highly attuned, empathic people. And sometimes we find ourselves in spaces where there isn't as much care. And so all of those factors can create some confusion about where we are, where our values rest. So always checking in and always coming back, particularly when we're involved in a collaboration where we are purposefully putting ourselves in an arena where we don't have a knowledge of all of the tools being used, where we don't have fluency in the languages of technology being spoken. This has proven to be challenging for me and something that I'm working on all the time.
Thank you, Kate. More with Kate Hilliard coming up after this. You're listening to Turnout Radio on CIUT 89.5 FM. Kate, your work, Story Creatures, made its Toronto premiere at the Fall for Dance North Festival and is a 7-hour durational installation performed in 1-hour shifts with a rotating cast. Tell us more about this work.
Well, I guess the first thing to share with you is that we never imagined making a show that was so complex. The whole proposal for the installation was to move forward my desire to approach scale in my work. That was the thing that I was hoping to learn more about. So originally, the proposal was that it was going to be for 15 dancers on a larger stage. That was the proposal of scale. And then the pandemic hit. And so all things stopped, and I started to think about other approaches to scale. And I have a background as a visual art history student, and I'm very inspired to be in gallery space, and the visual art community is just as much of an inspiration to me as the performance community. But there was really nothing to do but pause. So we paused during the global pandemic. And during that time, my focus was on my children. And I went through a lot of anxiety, a lot of depression about what was happening in the world. And, you know, we didn't know when things were going to open up, when things would be safe again. And I hadn't stopped in a really long time. I had been moving at a very fast pace. So all of a sudden, I had time to think about what was happening globally in terms of the geopolitical scene at the time, and the worsening of war and the heightening, the escalation of tensions, and the concern for the environment and the pending doom of the planet. And so all of these things hit me at once, and I was trying to do many things that were in conflict. I was trying to create a healthy, happy space for my children, and at the same time suffering heartbreak, watching, you know, I have this very clear image of looking at my son in front of a screen on his 9th birthday with his Lego strewn all around him. And that was a birthday in those pandemic days. And so I was heartsick about people not touching and things not being live and worrying about what the world was going to be when we came out of it. So I sat down one day and started to write, and story creatures fell out of me, this weird fable that is about the planet melting and things coming crawling out of the tundra, which is, of course, is a metaphor for the virus that we were currently working with. You know, I was asked a little while ago about where this came from. I can remember sitting in a canoe with my dad when I was 15 years old, and he was an environmentalist and a science teacher. And he said, "Kate, the planet's melting, and we're not ready for the things that are melting in the tundra, and what's going to happen. It'll be the super bugs that are about to affect us most gravely." So that story just fell, it poured out of me, and it felt like a very interesting proposal for something durational. And all of a sudden I started thinking about my project, which had been put on hold by the pandemic, in a different kind of scale. I started thinking about an environment where the audience would feel as if this has been happening for a very long time, and it's going to keep on happening after we leave. And of course, that's a hard thing to do in a theater. So I shifted my focus to gallery space. And I knocked on the doors of all of my nearest and dearest collaborators, and I asked for their participation and their imaginations. And we started to carve together a film landscape that was chaptered. And so the chapters are very much around that content. There is a chapter of a figure in a forest. Jeremy and I went out into the woods in the middle of the pandemic, and we filmed my body in the forest, this sort of very intriguing figure that is sentient, but perhaps not figurative. So that's one chapter of the film work. And then there's the experiment that I've already talked about. I was really distraught to find out that I can't give you the specific statistic, but the vast majority of scientific documents around the preservation of the planet and ecological concern are in English only. I'm concerned about the homogeneity of English. I'm concerned that we're erasing information with the extinction of languages. And of course, what this means for the culture and the people that those languages belong to. So that's another chapter of the work, this experiment of typing out "I am here" and then erasing it in many languages. And then the third chapter of the work is the moving bodies that started the research. And the research is, again, coding gestures to words. So we took the story creature's fable, and dancers, along with me in the studio, invented a movement for each word in the fable. So that by the time we had the entire story, they can speak the story with their bodies, if you will. So all of those things were kind of happening at the same time. At once, I was asking for recitations from a number of different people in my life. We tried to translate the story. The story has been translated in German and Spanish, in French, and partially in Italian. I worked with Ernie Sandy, who's the language keeper at Rama First Nation, to discuss an Anishinaabe Mohan translation of the work, which is a fascinating and very sensitive conversation around the ethics of what that entails. And what we were left with was a very, very deep and broad-ranging container of content that then we started to layer together and to produce a chapter that can then, the page can be turned many times with different casts of dancers. So the story creatures exists as a 60-minute structure that loops ongoingly in the gallery. And it means that two bodies are performing for 2 to 3 hours at a time, and then they cycle out and another two bodies come in. And the proposal for the work is that it, depending on how many dancers are participating in the work, it can last forever. It can last for as long as we want it to in a space. I have learned so much about it in these past weeks. I am forever grateful to the Fall for Dance North team for making the invitation to the AGO, and for the team at the AGO to accept the opportunity for an artist to see their work at that kind of scale can take a long time, and it wouldn't have been possible without their support. I should also say that I was so moved that the AGO invited me into the Joyce Whelan space, that this was even a possibility. Joyce Whelan is an artist that I've looked at, that I've been inspired by, that I've written about. Her consideration of myth and the Arctic, the cold places of the world, and the concern of imposing on other people's culture, all of these themes that come up in her work are also things that keep me preoccupied. So I was so moved that Bojana Stancic invited me to share story creatures in that space. It was a real honor.
You know, Kate, what I consider to be so exciting and intriguing about your work is this profound exploration of the very real tensions within our global climate and existence and human conditions. And I'm curious to know, as you reflect upon all that we spoke about today, and in particular your work with story creatures and beyond, what rests on your heart today?
Well, I suppose maybe what you mentioned at the very beginning of our talk today, the continuum. I have a strong sense of wanting to make things that are not just for right now, but for later. Because I won't be here, but my kids will be. And because I have had the privilege of the relationships that I've had so far in life. And so to me, there's something larger, something beyond all of us that has to be held with care. And so I'm interested in making things that speak to that and shed light on that. The continuum of things, the large arc, and no one can see the beginning of it and no one can see the end.
The continuum of things. What a powerful way to bring our conversation to a close today. Those words will sit with me for a very long time. Kate, thank you so, so much for sitting down with me today. You have really poured some wonderful seeds into this conversation. Truly a pleasure to have you with me today.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for the opportunity of speaking with you, and thank you for your interest in this work that I share with many wonderful, amazing people. Thank you.
Stay with us. More of Turnout Radio coming up after this. Today, you've been listening to the sounds of Cannonball Adderley with Autumn Leaves and John Coltrane with Blue Train. Welcome back to Turnout Radio. That was Kate Hilliard sitting behind the mic with me today. Many thanks to Kate for joining me on the show. Now, the work we discussed, entitled Story Creatures, considers the anthropological consequences of a great melt and began with a fable that Kate wrote during the global pandemic. To learn more about Kate and this work, head to katehilliard.net. And folks, if you missed the top of the interview, we invite you to visit turnoutradio.com, CIUT.FM, and some of your favorite podcast platforms where this episode will soon be streaming. Turnoutradio.com is also where you can learn more about our show, obtain resources, and access our library of previous episodes. Our production team would love to connect with you. To reach out to us via email, contact us at turnoutradio@ciut.fm. And stay tuned for announcements of more stories and events we're covering this holiday season. This brings us to a close of today's episode. Thank you for tuning in to share time and rhythm with us. Join us again next week for more of Turnout Radio right here on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Nicole Inica Hamilton. I hope your week finds you turning out to dance.